Ashton Whitmore Ober, thank you so much for being with us. We're so excited to talk about the Enneagram Made Simple. I don't know if you're like, our friend group just like talks in Enneagram code. We're just like, oh, you're being such a 4 right now. Like, you need to tone down your 8-ness, whatever it is. It's like, it has become this common language. And so we're so grateful that you're here. Thank you for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I was looking forward to this. I feel like it crept up on us fast, but it's something we've been planning for a long time. So I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, we have been playing this for a long time. I follow you on Instagram, which I think many people do that are listening in the world. And that's really kind of how I found you. You just give like little tips on like, how does the Enneagram really look in our everyday lives? And what are the practicalities of it and all that? So it's always so helpful because I had trouble figuring out my number. And it was helpful to be like, oh, this is what it could look like. But I'm getting ahead of myself because I'm too excited. Could you give us just like an overview, a general overview of the Enneagram? Like, what is it? How does it look in our lives? What, you know, just some key points so people who don't know what it is can know.
Yeah. So the Enneagram is an ancient typing system, an ancient personality typing system. It's been around for a very long time, somewhere between 2,000 to 3,000 years. So I always say, like, in case anybody is unaware, it's the year 2022. So it's been around for a very long time. It didn't come over to this side of the world until around the 1960s with, you know, some psychologists and some religious leaders sharing about the Enneagram over here in the United States. And then it didn't really gain popularity until some of the first books were written about it in English in the 80s. Obviously, it's been super popular lately, which is why a lot of people think it is a new, you know, test or system because of the introduction of technology and social media, where we have access to this information at our fingertips and are able to share it with others. But it has been around for a long time. The point of it is that there are 9 different types or 9 different ways of viewing the world. And the ways that we view the world are based on our motivations. So it's unlike other personality systems like Myers-Briggs or Strength Finders or DISC assessment that focus a lot on your behaviors. Instead, the Enneagram focuses on your motivation. So the why and the how behind what you're doing. So it's not, this is who you are. It's, this is why you do the things that you do. And then your motivations are made up of your biggest fears. So what you fear the most in your life, and then your biggest desires. So what you want the most in your life.
That's helpful in trying to like figure out what your number is. And I think a lot of us get so fixated on what's my number. And it's helpful to know it's not just how you behave in the world. Cause for a long time I thought I was a 2. And then I had to think about like the motivation behind some of the things. And so how do people go about, like, what's the most genuine way to go about finding your type? Like, I think there's a lot of confusion with that.
Ask a little question in between.
Sure.
Where does it, you said it was around for a long, long time, but not so much here. So where does it come from?
Yeah, so it stemmed from the Middle East and then kind of crept into South America when speakers and psychologists and theologians would travel, then they would take the concept with them. So it came to the United States from Central and South America.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it changed a lot since it like came over, and, you know, it's kind of like telephone, right? Like it's
right.
Became a telephone. Do you think it has changed a lot from like the ancient?
I think that it probably, some interpretations probably have changed, as well as when you see, you know, the titles of different types, you can see different titles. So I think probably those types of things have changed a little bit based on like the English language too. But as far as like the structure itself and the concept itself, that has stayed the same.
Okay. To get back to what is the best way to find your number?
Yeah. So, you know, there are a lot of tests that are out there. And we as humans love to take tests, and we love for tests to tell us who we are, right? We want somebody else to tell us who we are. We don't want to have to do the work ourselves. But tests are an okay place to start because it gives you a foundation for where you could be. But a lot of times when we do take tests, we answer questions in ways we want other people to perceive us, even if we don't think we're doing that, or we swear up and down that we're not doing that. A lot of the times we are. And we're also answering questions based on our behaviors, just because we're kind of trained and used to doing that, you know? So just like you said, Chelsea, that you thought for a long time that you were a two because you were probably demonstrating some of those behaviors of a two. And so if you're answering questions on a test based off of those things, like being caring and nurturing and what have you, you could score high for a two. And so then what happens is people take their result and then they run off with it. And they're like, okay, this is my type. And this is, you know, what do I do with this information? So there's no great response. Like, people don't like that I say this, but I always say that you do have to research, you know, take a test, look at your top scores, but then ultimately it's up to you to look at those main fears, those main desires, see how they show up in your life, and ultimately see what resonates with you to determine your type.
And I think I've read before, it's kind of like when you're reading it, it's kind of like the one that gut punches you. Like, you kind of didn't want to be that one. And that's like the shadow side of like, this is probably what it is then.
Yeah. So, you know, honestly, it's a lot of people love to like look at, you know, what we call the healthy qualities, because those are the things that make us feel great about ourselves. And then the unhealthy qualities are the parts that, you know, might give us that punch in the gut feeling of, oh, this actually might be me.
I'll open it to the group. Any questions for Ashton at this point? I have a list, so.
Sure. I was just wondering, why is number one one? Like, why does it start there rather than somewhere else? Especially considering, just curious, yeah, if there's some theory behind it or history behind it, maybe.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I don't have the answer to that one. I don't know if there's any rhyme or reason as to why the numbers are in the specific order that they are. I just obviously know about the ways that they're connected and the ways that they show up.
I just thought, maybe could it be like one being the perfectionist wants to be first, and nine being the peacemaker is like, okay, I'll be last.
I mean, that makes sense, yeah, right?
Raya, did you have a question?
I guess my question is, I recently have discovered that I was not the number that I thought I was for years. It was actually due to Chelsea, who was like, are you sure you're not a nine? And I was like, no. And then I'm sure enough, as I've continued my research, but I felt like I was having this, I don't mean for this to sound dramatic, but this like identity crisis. I was like, do I not even know who I am? Thinking I was a two for years and reading about it and buying all of these books and following Instagram accounts just about twos. And then to realize that I'm actually a nine, and I know that's a common mistype, but I felt like I was like so disconnected from who I was, because I was like, I don't even know who I am. And so I just wondered if you have any advice about like coping with the transition of realizing who you really are or what your type is, because I just like, I bought like 7 books in that moment and just was like, what's going on? Like, who really am I? So, I don't know. I just was wondering your input on that.
Yeah. So first of all, like, that's extremely normal. Like you said, the twos and the nines are very commonly mistyped. As a whole, a lot of women will score high for a two, just because we're taught to be nurturing and caring and kind and generous, right? Like, those are things that, and those are things that like we all want to be, right? And so when we take a test, a lot of women will score high for a two. So don't feel badly about that. Also, you know, some suggestions would just be to look into what, you know, kind of what you've missed about the nine. You know, like, you've been spending all of this time diving into the two, but now it's time to like make that transition. But think about how much you've spent learning about the two, where I guarantee you have friends or family members who have twos in your life. And so it's not all, you know, a lost cause, so to speak.
That's good. That's a really good way to look at it.
I think I did that at the beginning, was like so obsessed with my number that I read everything about that. And then I realized, oh yeah, like my husband's a one and there's other people in my lives that it benefits to know the whole spectrum of things, and especially like how they can interplay with one another. I wonder if you could talk about
and
that.
That's what like, I think I actually even wrote that in the beginning of my book, like don't jump ahead to your type just because
right.
It's very normal to want to do that. Right. So don't do that because we're actually connected to so many of the types. It might not be our main type, you know, but we are connected to them in some way. And so it's important to learn about all of them.
And I think it was like Richard Rohr who said, like, we're all of the numbers. Just kind of like our number is what we lead with. Or
right, right. I could sit here right now and tell you qualities that I have of each of the types, right? But it's like, what is motivating me to act a certain way or to, you know, relate to those qualities?
I want to kind of piggyback on just what you said about so situations or life events could then tilt us to one or more or the other for that event. So if we're in a very nurturing situation, we're a nine, we may go to a two, where if it's a little bit more something, we need to just go head on and buck up and put on our big panties, then we're more of a nine. Is that really what you're saying?
So what I'm saying is, well, your Enneagram type will not change. So your Enneagram type itself and those main motivations will stay with you from a very young age. What can change or fluctuate, and hopefully, are your behaviors, right? Like, thank goodness I'm not the 14-year-old Ashton that existed, right? So your behaviors should change, but your motivations will stay the same. Now, we haven't talked, might be getting ahead of myself, but we haven't talked about wings yet, which are the numbers on either side of your main type, and those can fluctuate. So those can go back and forth. You might have a wing that's stronger than the other one, but those wings could be situational. So I'm a two with a strong three wing. My three wing really comes out, obviously, in running my business, in communicating with people, and everything that I do for a living. My one wing is going to come out more so like around my family, where I'm more structured, like to stick to a plan, things like that. But my main motivation will always stay within my main type.
That was one of my questions about going back and forth between the wings, because I'm a nine and I really do feel like at times the eight is like full on and sometimes the one. And I was like, can you go back and forth? So you don't just have to have a, like, I feel like when people answer that question, they're like, I'm a two with a three wing or whatever, but it really, you have both.
Yeah.
And you can have both.
And most people, like I said, will say that they have a wing that's stronger than the other one. But part of the growth of the Enneagram is knowing that you have access to both wings and utilizing those characteristics. Mm-hmm. So like I said, I'll use myself as an example again. I definitely have more of a three wing, motivated, driven, etc. The things that I struggle with my one wing would be organization and order, right? So like, I like to have a plan. I like to stick to an agenda like ones do, but there are some areas that I struggle in with the one. And so part of the growth would be pulling on those characteristics to become a more well-rounded version of your type.
In terms of the triads or the three centers, I think I'm getting I understand the rage and the shame ones. I'm a four wing three. And in terms of the fear one though, I'm finding myself struggling to understand it a little bit. Especially for instance, the five. And I guess what I'm wondering is like, what is the five afraid of?
Yeah. So let me explain the triads here for a minute for those if you're not familiar. The Enneagram is split up into three different triads: the head triad, the gut, and the heart. Each one contains three types that have shared characteristics. So eight, nine, and one, they are mostly they're in the gut triad, which means they receive information through their gut and then they instinctively respond. And then they all have this connection to rage, like Nathan was saying. Twos, threes, and fours are in the heart triad. They receive information through their heart and then they feel about things. So they feel while making a decision or before they move forward, they see how they feel about it. And then they all have a connection with shame. And then 5, 6, 7, they're in the head triad, meaning they receive information through their head and then they think things through and process before moving forward or making a decision. And then they all have the connection with fear. So it's going to look different. Like rage looks different for 8, 9, and 1. Shame is going to look different for 2, 3, and 4. And similarly, fear is going to look different for 5, 6, and 7. So what Nathan's asking me is, how does the fear show up in fives? And it shows up in the way that they're afraid of like a depletion of resources. So they're afraid of like losing energy. They're afraid of losing their, you know, personal space, their time, their energy, things like that. So that depletion of those things, it's why they put up strong walls, boundaries, isolate themselves, protect themselves because of that fear.
Thank you. Yeah. I think this is helpful because I think I'm a 4 wing 3 rather than wing 5. And I think that I just need to solidify that understanding 5 a little bit better. Yeah. Thank you.
Ashton, how does rage show up in a 9?
Rage? I'll talk about all 3. This is my favorite thing to talk about is the triads. Rage shows up in the 8s as like a natural emotional expression. They don't really think about it much. It's just like happy, sad, angry, right? For ones, they'll say, I'm not angry. I'm frustrated or I'm annoyed. And then 9s, they will think that they're not angry. And then they'll just bury. And then it can come out in a passive aggressive sort of way and or an explosion.
Sense for a 9 to fear anger, or like a 9 to be very adverse to anger.
Yeah. And that's why they have a hard time admitting that it's something that they experience. Because to them, remember, for 9s, their biggest fear in general is conflict. And to them, anger incites conflict.
Kind of like a thought when I think what we're talking about right now in the head triads or the different triads, I'm a 3 with a wing 2 and I definitely feel things with emotions and things. And then when we were discussing shame, it kind of got me thinking if different types have a propensity to sort different behaviors like addiction or things like that based on their Enneagram type kind of, or because personally I'll share that I was an alcoholic for a long time and dealt a lot with shame. And this was before I even knew what an Enneagram number was. In finding that out, I kind of think that it's helped explain some of that situation to me. And then, so I'm just wondering, like, are there certain types that are more apt to fall into like just certain disorders like addiction or, you know, other things like that, behavioral disorders? Yeah.
Yeah. So obviously there's an array of behavior disorders and things like that, but and I wouldn't say that it's like more likely, but it's definitely able to be explained. So for example, let's just say like an eating disorder, right? So 7s tend to be known for eating disorders because they feel like they can't get enough of something, right? So they are constantly trying to like fill a void. And so by, you know, engaging in an eating disorder, they're using that control to fill that void. Similarly, though, 1s are more known to be focused on being self-controlled. And 8s, you know, have this relationship with control as well. So 8s and 1s could also both struggle with eating disorders based on, you know, 1s wanting to maintain that ability to control themselves and their environment, similarly to 8s wanting to control, you know, the situation and the big picture. So you can kind of explain things versus like this type is known to have this type of disorder.
Well, and then I think maybe what that might lead into in my mind is like treatment for based on your Enneagram type, because I like attended AA like everyone, and they kind of have this like blanket treatment that is supposed to apply to everyone, and it didn't apply to me, and I never understood why. But now reflecting back, you know, 8 years later, I do understand that it was because I have like this problem with shame. So standing up in front of everyone constantly, like that was not helpful to me. That was hurtful. But then right. It made me think, like, are there therapists or whatever, or, you know, people like that, that could utilize someone's Enneagram number to help them specifically based on what they're struggling with internally and their propensity to be like, where, you know, in whatever, you know, problem they're having.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are, thankfully, some psychotherapists and therapists as a whole that are adapting the Enneagram and using it in their practice, because treatment modalities are going to be different based on, you know, not just the person, but if you can understand what's motivating them, then you can figure out what's going to motivate them to stay in treatment or to continue with treatment or to get out of it what they're hoping to.
This was a question that was submitted to someone who can't, from someone who can't be here, but it goes along the same lines. What is the difference between Enneagram coach and therapist? And is there like any kind of overlap in that, or are they like just two completely different?
So an Enneagram therapist is hopefully going to be licensed, right? So they're going to have that licensure to practice therapy wherever they reside. So they're probably going to be, you know, helping maybe with a mental health disorder or counseling or something like that. I don't know if anybody has ever attended counseling in here, but it's a lot of guiding the individual to think, change their thought processes, right? An Enneagram coach is more so going to be walking alongside that person. And instead of, you know, guiding them in the way of, well, they're not going to be licensed, first of all. And second of all, instead of guiding them in a way to, you know, change their thought processes, it could be guiding them to change their behaviors based off of their motivations that are associated with their Enneagram types. They both serve different, completely different purposes, right? Where if you are struggling, let's say, with anxiety, could you have benefits to meeting with both? Yes, absolutely. It depends what works for you and the structure that you want. I can say, like, myself, I'm a psychologist, but I'm not licensed. So, you know, being somebody who's not a licensed therapist, I might be a little bit more like a coach, or I'm a little bit more tough and assigning homework and like saying, this is how you get from point A to point B, you know, and not saying that therapists aren't tough, but it's just a different relationship.
I have a parenting question. Some of us have kids on this call. Can you like make your kids a certain number? Not like I feel like with my oldest, I'm just like, oh my gosh, I'm like going to be making him a 2 because I'm always asking him to help. Like, or is that something you're born with? Or is it like environment?
Most Enneagram experts would say that you're born with your type, and then your environment kind of shapes how you respond with your type. That's why you can see siblings growing up in the same households with very similar life experiences, but having different types. You should be able to look back on your life experiences and see your type show up. So for example, I'm a 2, like I said, my sister's an 8. So we are very opposite on paper, look very opposite, but we both went through my parents' divorce when we were younger and like elementary age. And the way that she responded to that divorce was way different as an 8 than the way that I responded as a 2, right? Where I just wanted everybody to like get along and love me and be okay. Where she was like, I need to protect everybody, protect my family, protect my little sister, you know, at all costs. So to answer your question, like a lot of parents are like, I don't want to, you know, impose who I am onto my child. I want them to be who they are. And to answer your question, you know, are you going to guide them with ethics and principles and morals and all of those things? Yes, absolutely. But ultimately their type should be original. But that's also why I'm sure this is a follow-up question, so I'll just say it. It's also why we don't type kids at a young age, or, you know, assume that we know their type, because we don't really know why they're doing the things that they are, right? We're looking at behaviors. And so we really can't have kids type themselves until they have the language surrounding why it is that they're doing things the way that they are. And it's really hard, right? Like I see my almost 6-year-old nephew who, you know, has always colored in the lines and always puts his toys back perfectly. And I'm like, I swear he's probably an Enneagram one, right? But I don't know why he does those things, you know? So who are we to say that? And so we don't want to say, hey, I think you're a one, because then they might assume that they need to act a certain way.
I do that all the time with everybody too. And I know you're not supposed to like tell people their number, but it's so hard for me.
It's hard.
I think I'm a 497. Not entirely certain, but yeah. So I was wondering, is there a term? So let's say I am. Is there a term for the 9 and the 7? Like, what do I call that? Not my type, but my like auxiliary types or something, or sub-tri-types, or what are those other two called? Is there a specific name for that by any chance?
I just call them my tri-type. So again, the tri-type theory is that we all have a main type within the triad. So if you think back to the triads that I just said, so the heart, which is 2-3-4, the head, which is 5-6-7, and then the gut, which is 8-9-1. So we have our main type. So I'm going to use you as an example, Nathan, instead of me. So Nathan's main type is a 4. And then we have a type from each of the other triads as well. So his was 9 and then 7. So there aren't specific names for those. It's just that it's part of your tri-type. And so I would recommend the book, The Complete Enneagram, to discuss, you know, like your instinctual subtypes. And then to do research on your tri-types, because it is very complex. You know, there are specific names for those tri-types as well, like as a whole, like what 479 or 497 looks like. But as far as those specific types, don't really have a name.
Thank you.
Is that like the triangle, like your... where you go to in health, or
that's something? No. So those are numbers that you go to when you're in stress, or then numbers that you go to when you're in growth. Right. But you can also take on a misconception is that you only take on the negative qualities of your stress line and the positive qualities of your growth line, but you actually take on all the qualities from those lines. So for example, I'm going to use Nathan again. So he's a 4. And so 4s, when they're stressed, will take on the negative qualities of a 2. That can look like being needy, possessive of their relationships, having a hard time saying no, overly accommodating, things like that. And then when they're in growth, they take on the positive qualities of a 1, and that can look like being structured or organized, focused on fairness and justice, things like that. But the negative qualities of the growth line are what we call our blind spot. And this is typically how we respond when we're with the people who are closest to us. So like our friends, our family members, our partners, things like that. And so that rarely happens, right? It's only when we feel comfortable with those people. So for the 4, that's the negative side of the 1. So that can be judgmental, critical, perfectionistic, things like that. So showing those qualities to the people who are closest to us. People also take on the positive qualities of their stress line, and that's really where we want them to be. That's really what we call like the ultimate growth. So for 4s, that can look like being very empathetic, focused on other people, caring and generous, like a 2, kind of like relinquishing their own needs to serve others.
So this is relates to that, actually. This might sound silly, but can you continue along the integration lines? So for instance, if I were to like integrate, let's say, even more, would I continue on to the number 7, for instance, or is that not a thing?
No. So you will stay within those 3 types.
All right. I had to try.
So then how can you use, because if the Enneagram is about motivation, but like, let's say if I'm a 9, I go to 6 in stress, like, but I would maybe recognize that by behaviors, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, how do you use that to like pull, like get yourself back into like healthy or into growth?
Yeah, obviously the first step is awareness, knowing that, you know, once we know what we look like when we're stressed out or the behaviors that we exhibit when we're stressed out, then we can have that realization of, oh yeah, I'm stressed out right now. So having the realization of the behaviors, but then having the realization of those triggers as well, or the things that might set us into that stressful spot, so that we can identify those. And then it is about kind of changing those thought processes and behaviors around that. So for 9s, it often looks like, you know, what is making me feel anxious or overwhelmed or worried or thinking about worst case scenarios? Like, what is it that's causing me to have those thoughts? And is there a way that we can eliminate that, whatever that is that's causing you thoughts? Or how can we get back on a path of growth instead of stress?
Does it shift your motivation though?
Like, no. Your motivation will stay. So for 9s, you know, it typically is something that, well, a conflict situation oftentimes will send people into that stress line.
Gotcha.
If we're looking for an Enneagram coach in our area, how do you recommend going about that? Like, how do I know I'm not just going to get someone who's like absolutely has no idea what they're talking about? Like, is there a way that I can seek that out, or is it kind of just trial and error?
I would look for somebody who's definitely certified, and I would ask them where they've received their certification. You know, there are going to be some certifications that, you know, aren't up to par. And so it is often just like finding a counselor too. Even if somebody is certified and, you know, knows what they're talking about and has been doing this work, you just might not mesh well with them, you know? And so it is going to be about trial and error at first. A lot of Enneagram coaches do give you the opportunity to have like a consult call or a discovery call where you can first see if you kind of vibe with them before you go on with your Enneagram coaching journey. But I would definitely take advantage of that because you can tell pretty quickly. And I will say from the coach's perspective, you know, there are some people that I feel like I don't mesh well with, and I'm not going to take them on that journey if we aren't a good fit together. So it's also not just you seeing if that person is a good fit, but the coach also seeing if that client is a good fit as well.
I met with a coach a couple of weeks ago, and she's was very into the subtypes. And I wonder if you could just do an overview of like what the subtypes are.
So the subtypes are also called the instinctual subtypes because we all have different instincts of reacting or different, you know, just natural instincts that we have. So there's the 1-to-1 subtype, which is our natural instinct to, you know, connect with other people. So the 1-to-1 is also sometimes called sexual, and it's like that need for intimacy. There is the social subtype. So that's typically our natural instinct for belonging or to be part of a group. And then it's the natural instinct of self-preservation. So that's like putting yourself first, protecting yourself before serving others. So when we mix our instinct with our type's core weakness, then that's what produces our instinctual subtype. And that's what I'm talking about with the book, The Complete Enneagram, because instead of having just 9 different types, like your standard Enneagram types, the instinctual subtypes actually produce 27 types because there are 3 different instincts for each of the types.
And how do you go about finding your subtype? Is it just research?
Yep. Research. I know that's like the answer that people, like I said, don't really want to hear. But it is about that. I mean, there are some tests that are out there, but you know how I feel about that. Yeah. And really just seeing like, do you feel like your need to protect yourself is higher, or do you have this need to like belong? Or do you have this need to, you know, for intimacy or connection with other people? So start there. And then from there, you know, you can look up the different types and things like that.
Did you say there was a book you recommend about that?
Yeah. The Complete Enneagram. And that has like all 27 types in detail.
I know you have the book, The Two of Us, and it's for couples to use, correct? About the like how to use the Enneagram in a relationship. I wonder if you could just share a little bit about that.
The Two of Us is actually a journal. I actually think I have it sitting right here. It's a journal that's not related to the Enneagram, but it is for couples. And there are daily prompts that you're supposed to respond to each year. So let's say I'll just flip to, I did that pretty quickly, May 25th. Identify a moment that made you cry unexpectedly. So there's a line for you to write your answer. There's a line for your partner to write the answer. And then next year on 2023, you come back and you answer the exact same question. The point is to see how your answers have changed over 3 years.
Oh, that's
but nice. This is not, does not have anything to do with Enneagram. So don't, okay. Don't look through it and be like, wait a second.
We see your name and all we think is Enneagram.
I know.
But how does the Enneagram work in relationship?
I do have a relationships book that is called The Enneagram for Relationships. And that was the first book that I wrote because I've seen how the Enneagram has impacted all different kinds of relationships. And the book covers relationships with your colleagues, relationships with your family members, romantic, of course, and then friendships. And so once we know what's motivating other people to do things the way that they're doing them, then we can start to have a little bit more understanding for the way that people do things, right? I always talk about my sister. If you follow me on Instagram, I always talk about my sister because that is the number one relationship that I have seen changed in my life because of her being an 8 and me just thinking that she was yelling at me my entire life. And not understanding really the passion of an 8. And now, and on the flip side of that, you know, her just thinking I was too sensitive and like in my feelings all the time, and her not understanding that she needs to be a little bit more sensitive and empathetic towards me. And so ever since we've had the language of the Enneagram, seeing our relationship just completely change because of that understanding, where if she is like flipping out about something, it's likely not that she's flipping out. It's just that she's passionate about something and communicating in that way. I've seen, you know, a deeper understanding between my husband and me, with him being a 6 and me being a 2 and understanding his need for safety, security, things like that. So you really like, yes, you have to start with identifying your type and learning about you, but then taking this into all facets of understanding with relationships has been really impactful.
I could see the benefit of like a staff using it. Like knowing how people like motivate, like are motivated in the workplace, like how much smoother.
Yeah. And honestly, that's primarily the work that I do right now is working within the workplace. Really ever since the pandemic, when we were forced to be at home more and on Zoom meetings like this more, and learning how to communicate with people who have different types than we do and understanding different motivations to get projects done and things like that.
Would you, or do you, I guess, do like trainings or sessions with like teams of?
Very often.
Really? Okay. Mm-hmm. I would be really interested in that. I actually work at an eating disorder treatment center. So when you were talking about eating disorders.
Interesting that I brought that up and had no idea.
I know. Yeah. And so I think that I ask my patients to do it all the time and really figuring out exactly what you said, the why behind this behavior and like the why behind, like, why are we using our eating disorder and stuff has been absolutely like, it completely changes the way that like I provide treatment and the mm-hmm. way that I feel like the patient's journeys happen. So I've like seen it work in real life, but think it would be so cool to do like a training with my colleagues because I'm the only one who like even knows what the Enneagram is here.
Yeah.
So I'm like constantly training.
Yeah. And not just like, you know, how to work with each other, but I, you know, obviously I went through a couple of the types with eating disorders, but I can, obviously it affects a lot of people and there's always a motivation behind that.
How have you seen the pandemic have you seen the Enneagram kind of play out within the boundaries of the pandemic?
How have I seen the Enneagram play
out? Whenever you were saying we had to learn this whole new way of working and stuff, I was just thinking if you're three, your motivation to be seen and how have you seen the pandemic kind of in conjunction with Enneagram?
Yeah, the thing that I remember the most is, a lot of people and a lot of Enneagram accounts and educators would say, when it first began, the sixes must be freaking out, right? The sixes are the types that are most prone to anxiety and worry. But every Enneagram six that I talked to was like, we've prepared for this. This is something that, we are the ones that are prepared for this. The rest of you are freaking out, That's the thing that sticks out to me the most. But obviously, the types that struggled the most are sevens who mm-hmm. had to stay inside and not be out doing things, threes who like to be seen. And I think, types like nine who value coziness and being comfortable, we're okay with it. We're okay with being inside and redirecting their priorities a little bit. Overall, that's a lot of what we've learned is redirecting our priorities through the pandemic. But it has been interesting to see the different types show up in different ways throughout the past several years. I always say with my Enneagram 6 husband too, remember when people were hoarding toilet paper? I never worried about toilet paper once because we have stockpiles of it. He has toilet paper all the time. We get, paper towel deliveries just showed up yesterday. I'm like, we don't need paper towels for another 2 months. Why is this here? So, just looking at those qualities of the types too and just appreciating them for what they are,
It came through for y'all.
So we all became more six-ish during that.
Yeah.
I was wondering, sorry if I'm asking too many questions, by the way.
Not at all.
So I believe I'm a counter type. So I'm an SP four. And I was wondering, do you believe that being a counter type inherently makes life more challenging? Or is that something I just made up in my mind?
I don't think it makes things more challenging. I think it explains things better, right? So a counter type within the instinctual subtype structure, there's always one of them that there's considered a counter type, meaning that it doesn't typically look like your stereotypical version of that type. So I'm a counter type as well. I'm a self-preservation too, which means that I don't identify with the stereotypes of the two of putting other people's needs first. I've always put my own needs first. And so similarly to your wings, besides the needs of my child, right? It's kind of a given. Yeah. So with your wings, how they can fluctuate, your instincts can fluctuate too. So right now in this season of my life, I have grown to be a self-preservation too, meaning that I look more like a seven and able to put my own needs first. So I don't think it makes your life more difficult. I just think that there's probably not as much information out there that's going to resonate with you because so many accounts that are on social media aren't considering the counter types when they're creating information, they're utilizing those common stereotypes. And I'm guilty for it as well. How many times do I say that two is only, adhere to the needs of others? And I'm like, here I am being totally able to go get a pedicure if I want.
Can those change?
Your instincts?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you usually have some stacked. So you should be able to look and see the order in which they relate to you. So some people you might see say, I'm a self-preservation social too. Meaning that self-pres is going to, outweigh the others, but social is not that far behind.
Okay.
But, in 5 years' time, maybe I'll be more of a social too.
I think to tie the two topics, I think my intuition would tell me that the SOs might have had a harder time during the pandemic than the SPs perhaps, because if they wanted of that social.
That's a good point.
Do you think there are any drawbacks, is the shortcomings of the Enneagram? Like, what would you say are shortcomings of it?
I think that it doesn't take into account everybody's experiences. You know, I don't think that it, you know, allows for some identities that people have or certain life experiences, right? When you think of cultures, how different cultures mm-hmm. were maybe taught to protect themselves like an eight. And so they might look like that outwardly, but have different motivations, and that might make it difficult for them to figure out their type. So I think that's probably a shortcoming. I also think, you know, just the fact that there weren't really any books published in the English language until the 1980s kind of, you know, hurts our cause a little bit, but a lot of things were done like word of mouth back then. And that's, you know, something that's difficult to spread or even like prove to others.
What do you think is one of the biggest misconceptions of the Enneagram?
I think a lot of people assume that it's just another personality test and cool, I know my type. And now I, like I said, can just run off with that. And they don't utilize it as a tool mm-hmm. to become a better version of themselves, to understand why they're doing things the way that they are, to prevent stress from happening, like all of these different ways that you can utilize it as a tool. So I think that's a common misconception. I also think that a common misconception is when people say that the Enneagram is just putting me in a box or is just labeling me. And I think it was Ian Morgan Crone who said the Enneagram is trying to get you out of the box instead of putting you in the box. And I think that's important to really kind of just look at the Enneagram as what it is and to understand what it is, but not to base your entire identity off of your Enneagram type. You know, so a lot of people will use it to like excuse behaviors like, oh, sorry, I responded that way. I'm just a three. And instead using it as a tool to become the best version of yourself.
I use it as a tool to explain other people's behaviors. Like I'm like, mm-hmm. oh, they're just being an eight or whatever.
That's fair. Okay. And it helps, right? Because, you know, I have quite a few ones in my life. I also didn't know like why they felt this need to like be so organized or write all the time. And so again, understanding those things now, as somebody who can see it pretty clearly and also see when they're going into stress and understanding what that looks like. And so again, not just learning about yourself, but learning about other people as well.
Are there Enneagram numbers that just like don't go together? Like, even though I wing eight, I have like a reaction when somebody comes around that's like an eight, like I like feel it in my gut. Like, mm-hmm. are there just Enneagram numbers that don't mesh?
So this is one of the most common questions that I get because people always want to know like, what's the best type for me to be around? Or I was just on a call with a company earlier and they were like, what's the best Enneagram type for me to hire? And I'm like, that's just not possible because within each Enneagram type, there are what we call levels of health, right? So somebody could be a really healthy version of their type. And then they would be a good person to hire, or somebody could be a completely unhealthy version. And then, you know, you don't necessarily want that person on there, but maybe they're a three and they're hardworking, but they're an unhealthy three. So like, you know, you don't want that anyways. So it just depends, and it depends on understanding those pieces about one another, you know? But, you know, eights and nines can seem like polar opposites at times. Twos and eights can seem like polar opposites. Eights and ones have a hard time with each other because they can clash and both like to be in control, you know? So there are just things to look at based on the types, but there aren't any like wrong combinations.
See, it sounds like there's just a problem with eight.
I literally, as I was like repeating that, I was like, I need to switch the numbers.
I have to say, I never read the book. I mean, I saw the book there and I sometimes heard something about Enneagrams, but I mean, really, I didn't really know anything real in depth because it's about motivation. Okay, that was new to me that it was about that. One question, but now I'll definitely read the book. Saying that. So you said before it came from the Middle East, but then you didn't say anything about it. Is it now known all over the world? I mean, Europe mm-hmm. and so? Yes.
Yeah, now it's international.
Okay, so that was my first question. The other question is, with that knowledge, I mean, you can judge yourself, but may you judge the other ones, or do you have to say, oh, you may fill out your Enneagram and then I know the numbers? Or can you by yourself see according to their behaviors and so, oh, this is A type so-and-so?
So not necessarily. Like, I always say that we can't really type other people or identify what their type is, because we're only seeing the behaviors and not the motivation. So we could be seeing somebody who, you know, is very extroverted, let's say, and assume like, oh, they're very extroverted, they must be a seven, but their motivations could be that they want to be seen as valued or respected. And so then they put on this extroversion to be valued and respected. And that would mean that they're a three, right? So we can't type somebody else. We can only, you know, share the information and hope that they do the work to discover their type as well.
Well, we're just at time. I'm sure we could have a million more questions. Ashton, can you just share, how can people find you and follow you?
Yeah, you can follow me on Instagram at Enneagram Ashton. Also check out my website at enneagramashton.com.
Thank you so much. This was very informative. I have a bunch of new things to go research now. So, but thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Thank you, Ashton.
Thank you.